Seeing you duly and seeing you as the colours of faith. The Bible reading from John chapter 19, beginning at verse 31. Because the Jewish leaders did not want the bodies left on the crosses during the Sabbath, they asked Pilate to have the legs broken and the bodies taken down. The soldiers therefore came and broke the legs of the first man who had been crucified with Jesus, and then those of the other. But when they came to Jesus and found that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. Instead, one of the soldiers pierced Jesus' side with a spear, bringing a sudden flow of blood and water. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
A reading from Julian in chapter 16. Christ showed part of his passion close to his death. I saw his dear face was dry and bloodless with the pallor of death, and then a more deathly pale in anguish, and then turning blue as death advanced, and afterwards a darker blue as death took more hold on his flesh. For his passion was revealed to me most distinctly in his blessed face, and especially in his lips. There I saw four colours, which before had appeared fresh and ruddy, full of life and lovely to see. This was a grievous change, to see this deep dying, and also, as it seemed to me, the nose shriveled and dried up. The dear body was brown and black, completely transformed into this fair living colour as it dried out. So I saw the dear flesh dying, seemingly, bit by bit, drying up with astonishing suffering, protracted torment, the dear body, discovered, continually dying.
Last week we sensed a real feel of time slowing down as Jesus' death approaches. And we focused on the great droplets of blood that Julian saw falling like beads or like water cascading over the eaves or even like herring scales scattered everywhere. And in this highly evocative imagery, she locates Jesus' passion in the domestic sphere, using ordinary passion icons to convey the intensity of Jesus' suffering. His copious bleeding, a metaphor for Jesus' overflowing and never-ending love for us. Our reading tonight is very challenging and is not often, if ever, used as a study passage for quiet days or study days. It's hard because Julian lingers on the details of the dying Jesus in microscopic precision. She gives us a very harrowing description of death. And we witness Jesus's last moments played out in the changing colours of his face as he dies. Ordinary passion icons, colours of death. Her writing draws us into a place of deep discomfort and distress, maybe, especially for those of us who have sat with loved ones as they die. And especially, I think, at this time as we're witnessing the horror coming out of Ukraine and the very distressing news and images of people shot with their hands tied behind their back. But she doesn't use highly emotive language, but simple, everyday language, describing what she sees as she focuses on Jesus' face. "For his passion," she says, "was revealed to me most distinctly in his blessed face and especially in his lips." This is in stark contrast, isn't it, to our gospel reading tonight, where again we're given very brief details, brief account, no details. John states, "But when they came to Jesus, they found that he was already dead." None of the other gospel accounts focus on his suffering in any way, or agony. In fact, they focus on the timeline of Jesus' death, taking us from 12 noon to 3 in the afternoon when he dies. So with Julian's reading, we have a real sense of an eyewitness account as she describes the colours of Jesus' death. It's as if she were there with the women at the foot of his cross, gazing up, watching and waiting as he dies. It's possibly an account of someone who has actually sat with someone they love as they die. Now, right at the beginning of this series, I talked about how we don't really know much about Julian herself, about her family background. And there's been speculation she could have been a nun. She could have been married with children and had a husband. It's very difficult to say. I believe, and this is just my opinion, that she was possibly married with children. And her child and husband had died before she was enclosed in her cell. There were many plague outbreaks during her lifetime, and it's possible that her family died during one of these. And the way she describes the motherhood of God and of Jesus in particular could give us those clues that she may have been a mother. She says, "The mother serviced is closest, most willing, and most sure. Closest because it's most natural. Most willing because it's most loving. Most sure because it's most true." Indeed, she refers to God as a mother who shows us natural love which never leaves us. God, like a mother, bears us and brings us into the world, giving us life. Sustains us in love, feeds us, protects us, knows our needs, and loves us. "As truly as God is our Father," she says, "He is our Mother." She continues, He wants us to take on the characteristics of a child who is always naturally trusting in its mother and in her love, whether in joy or in sorrow, and reveals that God, as our mother, keeps us very safe. We can say with certainty, as I said, that Julian lived through two major outbreaks of plague. We know that she is 30 and a half in 1373, which means she was born probably in 1343. Now, the first major outbreak of plague in this country was in around 1348, and it quickly spread through the population. In Norwich in particular, was hard hit. About 12,000 people died from the plague, which is about 30 to 45% of the population. That's huge. Just think of that in terms of the pandemic we've been living through. The death rate has not been nearly that high. That gives you an indication, and look how much we've been affected by COVID. So the devastating effects of plague are plain to see. Now, Julian is a young girl in 1348, and by the time plague comes back in the 1360s, she's around 20 to 25 years old. The second and third wave in particular took its toll on young men and children. And it's very likely then that Julian would have experienced plague at very close hand. And as I said before, it's possible a husband and children would have died during these outbreaks. Her reflections on motherhood and her use of domestic imagery are indicators, I think, that she had experience as a mother and a wife. And in particular, in this passage that we heard earlier, there are certain elements of her descriptions which resonate with the effects of the plague. The plague caused the body to turn gangrenous, and then the body would turn blue and brown and black. Those are the colours that we see in the passage from Julian. Her account of Jesus' death is quite shocking and distressing. His face is dry and bloodless with the pallor of death, and then turns a more deathly pale in his anguish. As death advances, his face turns blue, and afterwards a darker blue, as death takes hold on his face. She juxtaposes his fresh and ruddy face, full of life and lovely to see, with a grievous change, this deep dying. The nose shriveled up and dry, the body brown and black, completely transformed. Jesus dies, bit by bit, drying up with astonishing suffering and protracted torment. His body is discoloured and continually dying. Jesus is becoming bereft of all blood. It is as if, she says, he was being hung up in the air as a cloth is hung up to dry. What a striking image. An ordinary passion icon, like clothes drying on the line. This is in stark contrast to the horror of the last moments of his life. So where we come to tonight, it's not an easy place to sit as we watch the deep dying of Jesus. It's really hard and challenging and really distressing. Jesus' pain is bitter and sharp. Time has slowed to an even more painful pace as he is continually dying. And it seemed to me, she concludes, that the dying of Christ's flesh was the greatest pain and the last of his passion.